Hello and welcome to this audio session about 10 ways your engineering firm is at risk from hackers. My name is Carla Trobeck and I'm here with David Kakish. He's from In-House CIO. And today we're going to talk about 10 ways that engineering firms are at risk from hackers. And we're going to share cybersecurity scorecard as well so that you can evaluate how your engineering firm is actually doing. So David, why don't we just get started by talking about why this is important for executives at an engineering firm to be listening to?
Hi, Carla, and hello to the listener. If you're really anything like a lot of or some of the other executives at engineering firms, you probably have a false sense of security without realizing it. Maybe you're thinking we're too small of an engineering firm, or that nobody's interested in us. We're just, you know, a standard, very boring company. Or maybe you're thinking, hey, I've got an internal IT person, or I have an outside IT company, you know, they have my back. What we realize, or what, you know, what's out there is over 70% of the ransomware is actually geared towards small and mid-sized businesses, because they're an easy target because they don't have dedicated security teams like the big companies. And the other alarming statistic that goes with this is that 60% of SMBs will go out of business within 6 months of a cyber attack. Again, I'm not here to try to scare you into anything like this. I don't want you to fall into the complacency, because that's where these things happen and then you become an easy target. And, you know, for me, what I want you to learn by the end of this session, again, this is an audio companion that goes with the top 10 ways that engineering firms are at risk. We're going to talk about a couple of them. We're going to give you some practical suggestions where you can take actionable items. And again, this is not designed for the very technical person. It's really geared towards a C-level executive of an engineering firm, like a CFO. And so by the end of this session, we're going to give you a scorecard, and then you're going to see how your engineering firm is doing. You can do it yourself. You can reach out to us and we can help with that. If you want us to help with any of that, just send an email to hello@inhousecio.com. What I want to do is I want to start out with a story to get the message across. And this is a real story. It's an engineering firm, everyday engineering firm. It got hacked, and the hacker encrypted the servers and the backup for those servers. And the hacker brought this business to a standstill for 4 days. And then after 4 days, the company decided to go ahead and pay the ransomware so that they can get their backup, they get their servers up and running and things like that. The servers contained sensitive commercial information. It also contained employee information, including payroll and things like that. Here's what the general manager actually said. It feels like being robbed and violated at the same time. The hackers encrypted the backups as well. We had no choice but to pay the ransomware. And again, this is kind of like your everyday engineering firm. The way that they define it on their website is, we're a full-service integrated building design firm delivering design, engineering, and construction management services. I don't really want to share company names just out of consideration for that company, but if you really want to look into this, you can go Google this, find it, and look it up. But basically, they had 190 employees. They had an internal IT person. They had an outside IT firm that they worked with for over 15 years. The bottom line is they had a false sense of security. And what I want to do is I want to walk you through how this happened. And so the hacker gained access after one of the employees clicked on an email link. And in that email link, it left a crypto virus on the server. And then from there, it went and encrypted the company data. And the thing that they did that's different, that's really scary, is not only did they encrypt the servers, but they went ahead and they encrypted the backup system. Because what would have happened is, if the servers were encrypted, no problem, you can recover from the backup and be up and running. But when you do both, you're kind of held hostage and might need to pay the ransom to get the servers up and running again. And again, if you don't know this, the crypto virus is a software that a hacker installed on a system after he or she gains access. Usually it's an email sent to a user. They click on that and then it runs within your environment. What happens is it's all encrypted. And then in order for you to get the data back or to get the servers up and running again, you have to pay that ransom fee to get the decryption key so that you can go ahead and you can be up and running. So anyways, Carla, I'll come back to you, but this is a little bit about the story and a little bit about how it happened. And I guess I'll come back to you, Carla, so you can highlight a couple of things that we're going to talk about, a couple of bullet points, and then I can talk about them in a little bit more detail.
Sure. So one of the main ways that we know firms are at risk is poorly trained employees. So hackers know that some employees are poorly trained, and that's what they target, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The number one point is that they take advantage of poorly trained employees. Your employees, is the number one vulnerability in your business. The engineering firm that I just referenced, this is how they got hacked. An employee clicked on a link that contained a virus, and if the employee had not done that, that would not have happened in that environment. Now, to be fair, there's some other mechanisms, there's some other layers that this company could have had in place to protect itself. So it's not all on the employee, but I would say it starts with the employees. You want to make sure that the employees understand the significance of opening something from the outside. But in this case, if the employee was trained, didn't know who the user was, there was an attachment, and you know, didn't click on the link or open up that attachment, they would have been okay. But there's some other things that the company could have had in place. It could have had higher email security system in place to try to prevent the employee from getting that. They could have had a better antivirus and anti-malware solution to catch that, so when it did get installed on that computer, that it caught it right away. And this is key, and a lot of people, they could have had what is called internet filtering to prevent that employee from accidentally going to a website that's infected. Let me walk you through that a little bit, Carla and the listener, so that you guys understand. A lot of times an email will come through and it's got a link. And so the email itself may not contain a virus or any kind of malware or anything like that, but it has a link that takes you to a website, and as soon as you click that, it installs it. And that is easy for it to get around your email system. You know, a lot of times when I talk about internet filtering, people are thinking porn and violence and things like that. And yeah, that's fine. I mean, that's one component of it. But the really key component is I want to protect the company and the company assets and the employees from accidentally going to a website that might be infected. And think about, you know, every day you type in, you go to CNN.com or Google or take your pick. A lot of times, you know, we've got fat fingers, so we miskey something in. Very easy for you to get to a website that accidentally might be infected. And in this case, had this engineering firm had a system in place, internet filtering in place to prevent that employee from going to that website that's infected, that would have been a much better solution. So what you see here, it's not one thing. It's usually multiple layers, multiple things that are going on. And so I'm a big believer in having a multi-vendor, multi-layer security approach. And I'm going to talk about some of these things in a little bit more detail. So again, the number one vulnerability in your business is your employees. You want to make sure you train them, you talk to them about security best practices, and you formalize that. You make it part of the onboarding process, part of the HR process, part of the review that you have as a company. So Carla, I'll come back to you with some of the other points.
Right. So the number two way that hackers are threatening engineering firms is that they're exploiting devices that are being used outside of company business, right?
Absolutely. Let me ask you, how many times do you check your personal email when you're at work, right? You're at work, you're using a company computer or laptop, and you go and you check email or Facebook or Instagram or whatever floats your boat. I don't know about you, Carla, but I do it all the time. I'm checking my Gmail. I go there a couple times a day. I usually try to limit that though, so I can be productive. But let me walk you through a simple example of how you're vulnerable without even knowing it. So let's just say employees go and check their personal emails and they get a virus or they get a phishing attack or, you know, something sent to their personal email. There's nothing stopping you, unless you've got it locked down, from having that employee access his personal email or Facebook. You know, a lot of companies are not blocking that. You know, they allow people to do that because there's really no harm in that. But what if that employee goes and opens up an email and accidentally downloads a virus? What do you have there? And then also think about the personal browsing that some of the employees are doing. What if they go to a website? And again, let's just say a gambling website, but then there's a website with a slightly different letter in there and that website is infected, right? So really what happens is they're really exploiting the employees that are inside your network, but they're working around all of the corporate IT security mechanisms that you have in place. They're getting around that. Carla, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So if he or she is accessing a personal email account, the company doesn't have that high email security associated with the personal email. It's with the company email. So they're going completely around that and accessing it that way.
Yeah. I mean, I open up a personal email that contains a virus, and now it's on my computer, and now it's infected the whole network. So what are some of the other mechanisms that you have in place to prevent that, right? That's what the employees are exploiting. Or even websites, right? You'll go to websites that, you know, that might be infected. And so actually, that's one of the primary ways that they're doing that. It's less about an email with an attachment with a virus, because those most likely are getting caught. It's usually an email with a link, or it is a website that is infected without the user knowing that it's infected.
Okay. So I think the other topic that we wanted to talk about was that hackers are also attacking devices when they're off the office network. That's a big risk too, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. In engineering firms, there are employees all the time that are traveling, that are at remote locations, that are working from home. You've got a lot of people doing different things at different locations at different times. They're not all inside your office. They're not all behind your company's corporate network firewall. They're not all on your network. And so how do you secure these devices when you're not on the network itself? And if you look back and you look at some of the big hacks like Target and Home Depot, they didn't get around the company's internal security. What they did is they actually went through contractors, and they were able to exploit these big companies' networks and through contractors. And so your contractors, your employees that have access to your network when they're not in the network, what are you doing to secure that? You've got a laptop, right? You work at home, and whatever, you're browsing personal stuff, or you're connecting over a public Wi-Fi, you're doing, you know, a combination of different things like that. How are you preventing that from happening? And so there's ways to mitigate this risk, such as using a VPN, limiting the public Wi-Fi, or even not using it. Also setting up some security on the remote laptop. So a lot of people don't know this, but you can set up a company asset, a laptop, so that you still do internet filtering on that laptop to prevent the employee from going to websites. Again, porn, violence, or websites that are accidentally infected. They don't have to be on your company network to do that. You can still, even if they're at home and they're working, you can prevent that. And usually it's like a lot of the gaming sites and things like that that contain some of that. So anyways, what are you doing? What are you doing to secure the devices when they're off the network and when they connect into your network?
And that would include then, David, to people's personal devices when they're connecting to the office network. Like if somebody uses their own phone, for example, to access the office network, you need to protect for that too, right?
Exactly. And some companies will allow employees to, you know, bring their own devices or install certain things from the company on the personal devices. How do you do that? How do you set that up? And so a big one is an iPad, for example. A lot of people love the iPad, right? There's a really neat solution where you can create separate containers. So I have on the iPad where I do everything that's work-related, and then I do everything that's personal, and they don't cross each other at all. So I can't even take copy and paste from something I'm working on work and put it on the iPad locally in notes. So you can have it completely locked down. And again, the idea is to have that secure when we do that. And so, Carla, I tend to get into details sometimes, but did I answer the question?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. I think the idea is you still want to be able to give your employees these tools. You want them to have the flexibility that they don't always have to be in the office connected to the network to do their job, but you also want them to do it securely, right?
Yeah. And let me add one more thing. This is what I was going to talk about. A lot of people don't know this, but you can actually set it up so that when a computer connects into your corporate network via VPN or any other connectivity that you have, you can have it meet certain compliance policies before it can connect. So you can set it up so that, hey, that computer needs to have a minimum password. It needs to have an antivirus installed. It needs to have the patch updates installed. It needs to have an anti-malware installed. If that computer doesn't have that and it is a risk, it will not connect to the corporate network. And so there's policies that you can set, and they're really not that hard. You just have to have that in place, and then you can prevent a laptop that doesn't have a password from connecting into your corporate environment, for example.
Okay, maybe we can move on to the next one then. One of the other risks is that hackers will attack networks that have no backups or that have just a simple single location backup. So explain that a little bit more.
Yeah, that's the last one we'll talk about, but I want to highlight that because I think that's really important for multiple different things. So I'm going to talk about if you don't have an offsite backup, you probably don't. if you think you have an offsite backup, it may not be working. You want to be 100% certain about this. I can't tell you how many times we come in and we work with a firm and then they've got a phenomenal backup solution, but it's on site and there's nothing offsite. And I'm not talking about, you know, redundancy or anything like that, but an actual backup so that in the event that you've got a major disaster, you've got something that happened, that you're able to recover. So in the engineering firm example that I used, not only did the hacker encrypt the servers, but the hacker also went in and encrypted the backup. And so the whole idea is if you've got like no backups or if you've got a simple single location backup, you're really leaving yourself exposed and you want to be careful with that. So ideally, what you want to do is you want to have an on-site backup and then you also want to have an off-site backup. So you've got two backups, right? One that's on-site and then one that's off-site. And you have it so it's sophisticated enough so it's independent of your servers in the sense of if your servers get hacked or something happens to your servers that you're really able to recover from backup. The worst case scenario to be is if your servers are encrypted and then if your backups are encrypted because you're really dead in the water. And that's why we encourage having an on-site backup and then having an off-site backup and things like that. But again, if you're not getting a monthly report, a quarterly report, if you're not doing at least twice a year, kind of like a fire drill to say, hey, can we recover from our backup? You probably don't have a solid backup solution in place. And that's probably one of the top things that you want to do. So, you know, if worst case scenario happens, you always want to have this backup and the ability to recover from backup. And I'm not going to dive too much into details on that, but I just wanted to talk high level so you have a sense of that. So, and I guess, Carla, I'll come back to you before I talk about the scorecard and things like that if there's something you wanted to add.
No, I don't think so. I think the takeaway with backups is that you need the right technology and you also need to test it to make sure that it's working properly and it's doing what it needs to do for you.
Yeah, and I can have one of my team members talk about this forever. Not all backups are created equal and you know, you want to have the ability to quickly recover a backup and things like that. But that could be a separate audio session in and of itself. But I wanted to be brief because, again, this is geared towards the C-level executive and not, I didn't want to dive into too many technical details. All right. So I just want to recap a couple of things really quick. And then Carla, you can go ahead and you can sign off. And again, if you think that, hey, we're a small engineering firm, we're pretty boring, there's nothing special about us, think again, don't be complacent. Complacency is probably the number one thing to look out for. Remember, 70%, over 70% of the ransomware attacks that are happening now are targeting small and mid-sized businesses. They're not targeting the enterprise and the large businesses because they don't have dedicated security teams. So if you don't have a dedicated security team, you definitely want to think about this and you want to do that. So the two things that I want you to do at the end here is number one, go to inhousecio.com/scorecard. Again, that's www.inhousecio.com/scorecard. And I want you to go ahead and see how you do. We've got a bunch of questions there, a number of questions, and it's simple. The answer is yes or you're not sure. Carla, I think there's like, what, 8 questions or so? Is that about right?
That's right. 8 questions.
Okay. All right. So there's 8 questions. It's not hard. Again, not super technical in nature, but you really want to give yourself a yes or a not sure. And if you got all yes, fantastic. And if you got a couple of not sure, that's okay. You just want to go ahead and work with your current IT person, whether it's internal or external, to do that. So you can go ahead and you can do it yourself. That's number one. Number two, if you look at that and you say, hey, listen, we'd love to get some help, or, you know, we'd love to get some of our pressing questions answered. We'd love to schedule a free phone consultation. Again, just go to, you can send an email to hello@inhousecio.com or go to inhousecio.com/scorecard. And we'd be more than happy to go ahead and schedule a phone consultation. Again, free, where we'll answer any questions. And then if any of our services make sense, we can talk about that. If not, that's completely okay. And with that, Carla, you can go ahead and you can sign off.
Great. Okay, well, thanks everybody for listening to this audio session where we highlighted some of the cybersecurity best practices for engineering firms brought to you by In-House CIO. We hope everybody found this helpful. And if you do want to get some help to improve the score once you've taken a look at the scorecard, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach out again by email at hello@inhousecio.com, or you can just visit us online at www.inhousecio.com.